Jay Mariotti here, and what once would have been blasphemous, starting the NBA season on the very same night as Game 1 of the World Series, now is a reflection of how the American sporting culture has shifted dramatically. Never mind that Juan Soto, who became the second youngest player to homer in his World Series debut as the Nationals broke the unbreakable Gerrit Cole, can't even celebrate with an adult beverage until this weekend, when he turns 21. And never mind that the Astros roared back before falling short. The NBA long ago became hotter, cooler, hipper, more fun, more connected with social media and celebrity, and more in tune with millennials and Gen Zers and pretty much anybody else under 60. And with Kawhi Leonard flushing a dunk on one end in Clippers blue, and LeBron James hitting a nasty fadeaway on Leonard at the other end, flanked by Anthony Davis and their Lakers gold, the NBA launched a new era of player empowerment. The rise of the killer combos, with superstars teaming up as super tandems after the most explosive summer of talent movement in sports history. Even when mired in crises such as Adam Silver's hypocritical teetering about China and free speech, and the subsequent embrace of China by the shameful capitalist LeBron, the NBA commands constant attention and buzz. And if you wondered what the latest Chinese retribution might be, it came in the form of Chinese state TV not airing the opening night games. This while a group of protesters outside Staples Center chanted in support of Hong Kong, and a handful of fans wore Stand for Hong Kong t-shirts inside the arena. The World Series? Game 1 was compelling, but baseball continues to feel like a 20th century time warp, even in its better moments. Basketball, finally, Adam Silver said on opening night in Toronto, where the Raptors received the largest ever NBA title rings. Dinosaur-sized. Let me also add this. Basketball, thankfully.
Welcome to Unmuted with Jay Mariotti,
the podcast devoted to making sports talk great again.
Few have made more impact in sports media than Jay, and certainly no one has been called more names. Some actually true. He's the fiercely independent lightning rod who has produced massive ratings for ESPN's Around the Horn, made powerful waves as a national and major market talk host, and ruled Chicago as a columnist for 17 years. Unmuted is a topical whirlwind that doesn't stop until all the news is analyzed. So here he is, back from his day job in Hollywood. For the next half hour or so. Or maybe 40 minutes, depending on the Lakers, Raiders, Trump, and Odell Beckham Jr.'s latest mood swing. The one, the only, Jay Mariotti.
Karma, some might call the Astros' Game 1 loss. They are far from a likable organization among their Major League Baseball peers, with the arrogance of general manager Jeff Luhnow a sticking point, along with the pitch tipping and the sign stealing that prompts industry-wide paranoia. And that reputation will not be helped at all by a foolish, intolerable distraction. Assistant General Manager Brandon Taubman showing absolutely no discretion when suddenly, amid a raucous clubhouse celebration after the ALCS clincher, he shouted repeatedly toward a group of female reporters, and I'm quoting, "Thank God we got Osuna. I'm so bleeping glad we got Osuna," end quote. He was referring to Roberto Osuna, the closer who was acquired last season amid controversy after allegations that he committed domestic assault in May 2018 while a member of the Toronto Blue Jays. And while that charge was withdrawn, all the charges dropped, Osuna did serve a 75-game suspension from MLB, meaning Taubman should have known better than to shout any support for Osuna with media around, even during a team celebration when Osuna's ninth-inning struggles were a topic in the clubhouse for those media. The reporters were not talking to Taubman, and even if a Sports Illustrated reporter took liberties in accusing Taubman of taunting them in defense of Osuna's past, when that is an assumption more than a known fact at this point, it was a bad look nonetheless for an executive who was paid to avoid bad looks. And it was a horrible look for the Astros to initially say that story was fabricated when clearly there was an episode, or Taubman wouldn't have apologized in a statement. Now, did that episode contribute to the Astros losing the opener? No, Max Scherzer beat them, needing 112 pitches in five innings and holding them to two runs. And the Nationals' embattled bullpen beat them with help from starter Patrick Corbin, along with a huge night from the kid Soto and a home run from the inspirational old man Ryan Zimmerman. And Gerrit Cole turned human at the worst time, allowing three runs for the first time since August 28th and losing for the first time since May the 22nd. That's 19 consecutive winning decisions ago. Yo, Gerrit Cole, was that you?
Morning, very crisp tonight. You know, I made a poor pitch to Zimmerman for the home run. You know, I was okay with the tip your cap situation to the Soto home run. And then I just didn't throw a sharp slider to him, 3-2. We worked pretty well with what we had. You know, you're facing, these are the two best teams in the world right now. So, like, you know, you try not to beat yourself up too much, especially if you got to grind in those situations.
But certainly the Taubman commotion didn't help, with the convening national media obsessed with this topic, media who don't like the Astros as it is for bully-like media relations. Not that the reporters in the clubhouse were completely above board either. What the SI reporter could have done was ask Taubman right there and then something to the effect of, in saying that you're glad the Astros got Osuna, are you saying, Brandon, that you are supporting Osuna in the context of those previous allegations? That could have been the question. Instead, the reporter wrote a piece 2 days later and then called Taubman for a response. At that point, the Astros' lawyers were involved and they told him not to speak. Thus, he had no chance to tell his side of the story until after the piece was published and his reputation was damaged, while MLB had no chance but to investigate this matter in damage control mode, a process in which Taubman has no chance of winning and every chance of being suspended, because that's a good look for Major League Baseball, even though we still don't know the particulars of what exactly happened. A lesson for all reporters today: unless you live inside a subject's head, and you don't assume intent or try to extrapolate. Still, and I wasn't there, so I'm trusting media people, I don't know, it's obvious that Taubman was out of line for erupting, which left Astros manager A.J. Hinch to answer unpleasant questions before Game 1. Afterward, Hinch was left to wonder why his offense, which sometimes fades at the wrong moments, left 11 runners on base at home.
We're not going to be perfect. It does, when you look back in a close game like this, there's probably an opportunity or two that, you know, that you'd like back. But there's also a little bit of keep pushing with these guys to give yourself as many opportunities. I thought Jose had a really good at-bat against Scherzer in the middle part of the game. Got nothing to show for it. Cued the ball to first base. So we are in a results-oriented game, but I like the opportunities that we're creating for ourselves and making them use a lot of pitching tonight. Maybe that's a good sign for the remainder of the series.
As for Juan Soto, he's bursting onto the October scene in ways that Bryce Harper, with his $330 million, can only envy.
I've been working on that since my first day in the big leagues. Sometimes I just put gums in my mouth and try to beat it. But most of the time, just take a deep breath and focus. It's just the pitcher and me. Everybody around, I forget about everybody around. It's just you and me, and you try to make me out. And that's how everything comes down, and try to enjoy it.
So how surreal was that, watching Kawhi Leonard back home with the long-orphaned L.A. Clippers, continuing his dominance from last postseason in making a very early statement, even without the injured Paul George, that he indeed is still the best two-way player in the NBA, not you, LeBron James. Not that it matters too much 6 months from the playoffs, but Leonard and the Clippers were a sight to behold in the opener, outworking and out-hustling and outplaying the unprepared and rather dazed Lakers to the point LeBron and Anthony Davis were spent and rather useless in the fourth quarter. What the hell happened to LeBron? This was a home game for the Clippers in this ballyhooed new battle for L.A., yet the crowd was predominantly Lakers, meaning Kawhi and George realized they're interlopers in their own town.
Ladies and gentlemen, now would you please make noise for Clippers forward, Kawhi Leonard!
Hey. Welcome, Clipper fans, to the game tonight. It's going to be a great season. We're going to work hard every night. And let's get it going.
But in the first game of what should be a wild rivalry this season, the Clippers were at their grittiest and defensive best, with Patrick Beverley in feisty playoff form, and the bench still looking like the league's best, led by Sweet Lou Williams. LeBron stomped off with a -6 plus-minus rating, and defense already is a problem for him and a Lakers team that lacks depth. Any hour now, LeBron's agent Rich Paul will be dropping rumors about Jason Kidd taking over for Frank Vogel, who so far is overmatched as the head coach when the fourth quarter is that clumsy. Eesh. It's too early, I know, to draw deep conclusions, except this one. Kawhi is a beast in any uniform in any city, going solo as George recovers from shoulder surgery and wears a cool bow tie on the bench. Here's Kawhi.
Like I said before, once I'm playing the game, I'm locked in, so I'm thinking about the next play. But before the game, last night, it's a lot of emotions knowing that my family's going to be here tonight. And I'm just back here playing in the Staples in my hometown. It is just amazing.
Now, imagine if Kawhi had signed with the Lakers. Wouldn't that big three, the most imposing in NBA history, had all but guaranteed themselves a title? But Kawhi never has been a Laker fan growing up here in Southern California, never has been a fan of the glitz and all the Hollywood stuff, though his family members, like most people out here, are Laker fans. Davis realized it when he tried to recruit Kawhi in June. It didn't work out so well.
You don't talk much, so it was, I don't know. It was fun. Just to go through it, for me, to go through it with a player like Kawhi, to try to recruit him to come here. It was fun, but, we had one conversation, and I think he came out with a statement or his uncle or something. Somebody said it. He don't really like all the recruitment and all that stuff, so I feel like I overstepped my boundaries a little bit. But it was a fun process, and we'll do it all over.
As for LeBron, he got testy when asked about his failed recruitment of Leonard.
I'm not surprised by anything, really, to be honest. But also, don't get too excited. If you ask me, was I getting excited about it? I don't get too excited until things actually happen. But, yeah, I thought we had a chance, and that's all you can ask for. We put ourselves in a position to have a chance to get him. And, when he went to the Clippers, I thought it was just as cool. So, yeah, it's great for our league. He had to do what was best for him, and we all respect him.
What do you think swayed the decision for him?
Man, how the hell can
I
ask
you
that?
You said you saw him.
I don't know. Ask Kawhi. Thank you.
LeBron followed with an F-bomb. Bad day all the way around for LeBron. Which L.A. team, by the way, has more pressure to win a title? You might think the Lakers, seeing how Davis is a free agent next summer and could walk away if this team implodes, and it just might. But Leonard and George have locked into a very brief two-year window that had better produce a championship, or Leonard, who already has ended the title runs of San Antonio and Toronto by departing, won't hesitate to head elsewhere. Besides, the Clippers have an embarrassing history, and if they don't win now, you sense they never will. But at least now they have the league's best player. Sorry, LeBron. Sorry, Giannis Antetokounmpo. But Kawhi has two rings in two cities, and he wants another in his hometown, even if that town, Los Angeles, doesn't even know the Clippers exist, apparently. The ongoing China imbroglio is one of many crises in Silver's house right now. There also is the injury epidemic that has taken down so many stars in recent seasons. When assessing a possible championship for a team, health is more essential than ever. Just look at the Warriors, who lost their fourth title when Kevin Durant went down, and now they're not going to make the playoffs, in my opinion, as Steve Kerr says that Klay Thompson is out until next season. By the way, did the Warriors actually wait until the eve of their home opener so they could sell as many season tickets and suites as possible at the new Chase Center to announce this Thompson news that they probably knew about weeks ago? That's pretty sneaky. And if Zion Williamson intends to dominate the NBA the next, 15 years, then he'd better pay closer attention to his weight. Nobody wants to say it, but Zion has been overweight since he entered the public eye at Duke, and common sense dictates that his 6'6 frame, that's his real height, as measured last week, cannot support 285 pounds or more without knee issues. His torn meniscus on his right knee, the same one injured in college when a sneaker exploded, will keep him out 6 to 8 weeks, delaying what the NBA had hoped would be a powerful new storyline. And suddenly that Tuesday night league opener, Pelicans at Raptors, was a complete waste of our viewing time, even though the game went into overtime. They didn't see it in China, though. Here was Pelicans boss David Griffin disputing that Zion has a weight problem.
You know, I've seen a lot of the narrative out there about him that this happened because he's not in shape and he's too big. That kid's a freak of nature. When he went through his physical, he ran on the treadmill longer than the cardio stress test people have ever needed to put anybody through a test to get his heart rate up. That happens because he's touched by the hand of God to do this. He's in elite condition, and he stays in elite condition. He also has a body type that we're learning how to deal with as a 19-year-old kid. He can be 274 pounds and 8.5% body fat. He can be 280 pounds and 9% body fat. As we've gone through this process for our medical team, learning how they're going to keep him lean and giving him the core strength and stability and control he needs to handle all of that torque he generates, typically that means that you're going to do things to strengthen those areas. In this case, he gains muscle mass so fast and gains weight so fast, no one's ever dealt with anybody like him before. So he's 19. It's going to be a learning experience for all of us. But the notion that this happens somehow because Zion's in poor condition is just asinine.
To the NFL, where Tom Brady is selling his house, his trainer is selling his house, and Brady's contract is set up to be voided at the end of the season. So, obviously, as the raging conjecture has it, Brady is setting himself up to leave the New England Patriots. Again, don't assume, or you become the first syllable of assume. That would be ass, A-S-S. Next year, Brady will be 43, and if he wants to play until he's 45, in what has become a new age miracle that makes more history every time he wins a game or throws a touchdown pass, it's clear he's going to have that opportunity again in New England and anywhere else he wants. But come on, let's think about this. Might he be setting himself up actually for leverage in a negotiation with Bob Kraft and Bill Belichick, who so far have not paid market value to Brady to look at the numbers around the league as he sails uncharted waters in defying the human aging process? Would Brady really leave the Patriots after possibly a seventh Super Bowl title in a system he knows better than his wife and kids, just so he could start over with another team for more money? Come on. Yes, there are many problematic quarterbacking situations out there. Chicago, Denver, Tampa Bay, Miami, Cincinnati, to name a few. But Tom Brady is going to sign with the Bears or the Broncos at age 43. That's beyond bizarre. this entire Tom Brady thing is surreal. But he's going to sign in Chicago and freeze his ass off with the team that a franchise that's going nowhere. Come on, please. If anything, he might be setting himself up for retirement. And if he does win number 7 this season, wouldn't it be the perfect way to complete the greatest quarterbacking career ever? To help Brady's chances, the Patriots acquired Mohamed Sanu, who isn't Antonio Brown, but he does provide one more weapon for an offense that plays a complementary role to Belichick's greatest defense of his New England reign, and that is saying something. That defense had Sam Darnold seeing ghosts, as a microphone caught him saying on the sideline after his third of four interceptions in New England's 33-0 rout of the Jets on Monday night. In a game in which Darnold finished with, ready, a 3.6 passer rating, and he looked completely lost. Mind explaining that ghost comment, Sam?
Yeah, you know, I think for me, I just gotta, you know, just when I talk to the coaches, I just gotta be, you know, straight up, and you know, for me, I just gotta see the field a lot better. That's kind of what that means, and. You know, just it was a rough day out there, rough night out there, and obviously I got to be better and learn from the mistakes, but we will get better.
The Jets, by the way, are upset that the comment was aired, and shouldn't Coach Adam Gase have better things to do than rip ESPN? Scenes like that bring players closer to the audience at home. And players often get mic'd up. Coaches get mic'd up. We often see it on NFL films or inside the NFL. And now Adam Gase, who needs somebody to blame when he should be looking in the mirror, is blaming ESPN.
Yeah, I think we'll be looking into that pretty hard. That was one of those things that was really disappointing to hear about after the game. I don't know if I've ever seen that where, you know, somebody that was mic'd up was basically, you know, a comment like that was allowed to be aired. It bothers me. It bothers the organization. I mean, obviously, we're going to be looking hard into, you know, our cooperation going forward.
The Patriots are haunting everybody this season. The boogeyman, as Kyle Van Noy put it. And at 7-0, they look Super Bowl bound again with Patrick Mahomes hobbling and the AFC competition looking mushy. Beyond who? Baltimore and maybe Houston? The Patriots will play the Ravens and Texans on the road in a stretch that also includes home games against the Cowboys and Chiefs. Mahomes should be back by then, but Coach Andy Reid, who created this roaming dynamo in Kansas City and now has to live with the injury consequences, is in no hurry to rush Mahomes back in a weak division.
So all these guys are different, you know, the way they do it. I don't think you put a timeline on this thing. I think you just go and you take it, you know, as you go off his how he feels and what the doctors say and go with it. I don't think there's a set time, though. I know people want time. I don't think you can do that with this injury. You've been around him long enough, you know that there's nothing is impossible with this kid. He goes 100 miles an hour, and it's important that, you know, and he's smart this way, but it's important that he listens to the doctors and the trainers and that he continues to work hard at the same time and get himself ready to go. So he's doing all the things that he can possibly do.
So can the Patriots go 19-0? You will be hearing that question as they keep winning. I still say Belichick will not let Brady play if the Pats have home field clinched. It's a 14-0, not wanting to risk injury to their 42-year-old quarterback when his only backup is a rookie, Jarrett Stidham. But the way that defense is dominating, maybe the Patriots could go 16-0 with Stidham and then bring back Brady in the postseason. And the NFL trade deadline is becoming quite the thing, with big names moving on every day, including wide receiver Emmanuel Sanders to San Francisco. In a statement that the 49ers are serious about winning more than a division title. But some teams are sending negative messages, such as Detroit, which shipped away starting safety Quandre Diggs to Seattle in what might be a hint of tanking, and the players are pissed off, as they should be. There's no bigger quarterbacking crisis than in Chicago, where general manager Ryan Pace has committed the latest blunder in the city of weak shoulders. I trademarked that when I was there. Mitchell Trubisky is a bust. That's what the blunder is. He's the new Blake Bortles, and that town is mortified that Pace traded assets to move up in the 2017 draft to take Trubisky when, oh my God, Mahomes and Deshaun Watson were available later in the first round. Oh. It's not as if the Bears weren't forewarned. Watson's coach at Clemson, Dabo Swinney, said passing on Watson would be akin to passing on Michael Jordan. I think they heard that in Chicago. And Watson, remember, said this at the time.
Two responsible people who say, I like Trubisky more than Watson.
Hey, man, you're going to have to live with the consequences that come with it.
Love it.
You know, that's how I see it. You know, I try to stay in my own lane and try not to, you know, take that path. And, you know, I respect Mitch and what he's done and all the hype he's getting. But at the same time, you know, all my results speak for itself. And, you know, I feel like I've accomplished a lot, accomplished everything that I could. And, you know, it just, I guess if that's who they're going to roll with, then, hey, so be it.
Live with those consequences.
Right.
I like that.
That's a good word.
As Trubisky sabotages an offense with no identity, direction, or purpose, an epic defense has fallen apart as well. And at what point does Pace fix his mistake by either firing coach Matt Nagy, who was hired to develop Trubisky, or to find yet another quarterback for a city that hasn't had a truly great, healthy QB since who? Sid Luckman? Dating back to the leather helmet days, Sid Luckman. Let's see, would Pace try to acquire Cam Newton? No, he shouldn't do that. Not at Newton's high price, and not when Newton is about half the player he once was after numerous injuries. Jameis Winston, oh my God, he's a gunslinger, but a weak version of Jay Cutler, and the fans couldn't stand him. How about Matt Ryan? I think that's a better idea in a trade, but Atlanta's going to want the moon, or Nick Foles. Or how about signing Teddy Bridgewater in the offseason? My guess is Pace is one of these stubborn GMs who will stick with his creation and defend his wavering legacy, Pace's, for another season. And the Bears are just going to regress again. 35 seasons and running, by the way, since their only Super Bowl title, all because, altogether now, they cannot find a quarterback ever. Or at least since Sid. NFL teams try to save money and get by with a middling backup quarterback. But this season should remind everybody that the number two QB is a vital piece of the roster. If you have the right guy, he can save your season. Look at Bridgewater in New Orleans, or even set you up for a new future. Kyle Allen in Carolina, Jacoby Brissett in Indianapolis, Gardner Minshew in Jacksonville. But is Matt Moore really ready to carry the Chiefs as Mahomes heals, beginning Sunday night against 6-1 Green Bay? And is Chase Daniel any better than Trubisky? No. And Mason Rudolph, I don't think, is ready to be Ben Roethlisberger's heir apparent in Pittsburgh. And the same people who were lauding Daniel Jones as a future Hall of Famer now are ready to boo him out of New York as they did the night the Giants reached to draft him. What I do know is this. When Brady, Brissett, and Jimmy Garoppolo were in the same QB room together in New England, oh my God. Now it's time for The Buzz, our deep dive into sports and life. Chris joins the program. Chris, Kawhi Leonard already has taken over this basketball rivalry in Los Angeles, not needing Paul George to score 30, beat the Lakers, and reduce LeBron and AD to mannequins in the fourth quarter. Yet, Chris, when the Lakers have two-thirds of the crowd at a Clipper home game after all the money Steve Ballmer spent to bring in both Kawhi Leonard and Paul George and make these enormous moves, how is Kawhi supposed to win over L.A. when only 5,000 fans at a Clipper home game against the Lakers are Clipper fans?
Well, Jay, I think it started last night. As much as Laker fans want to now walk back and go, oh, it's just the first game. oh, the Clippers were playing like it was the Western Conference Finals, and the Lakers are just easing into things, and they don't have Kyle Kuzma. I would point out the Clippers don't have Paul George. But I digress. The point is it started last night. Being able to beat LeBron and AD out of the gate, not just beat them, but make them look old and tired. The Clippers have an energy where they're a fast basketball team. It's an exciting team. Now, I'm not saying they're going to win the finals or a championship, but I don't. If the Lakers don't somehow figure out to defy age, maybe LeBron and AD should. Well, AD's not old, but maybe LeBron should call Tom Brady. Here's the thing. It starts with beating the Lakers hands down, which I think they have the potential to do this season without a doubt. They have to win a finals. And again, they're in contention. Are you ever going to play the Lakers at Staples Center and have the place be entire Clipper fans? I don't think that's reasonable, and I don't know if that's the goal. I think the goal is to win a championship, start there. Then Doc Rivers has a banner to put up. Then Steve Ballmer has a banner to put up. Then L.A. fans can actually go, wow, this team's a little more exciting. Will L.A. ever be a Clippers town and not a Lakers town? That's like saying, will L.A. ever be an Angels town because they win a World Series versus a Dodgers town? No, but that doesn't mean you can't have success, Jay.
And Chris, you are a Nationals fan and an Astros hater, so the floor is yours about Game 1 and all the extracurricular madness surrounding the Astros.
I didn't watch a lot of it. I was busy preparing for Lakers basketball and watching Lakers basketball. I watched some of it at times, and I followed along with technology. I'm excited for the Nationals. I've said this. I think they have the potential. They have that Cinderella story where they blow through the Cardinals, they take out the best team in baseball, my Dodgers, and now they take down the Astros. I think it's all written in the stars, and to do it after losing Bryce Harper, again, it's just an amazing story being written.
And, Chris, I have a commentary on this later. Have we reached the point with Mega Millions spent every weekend on NFL gambling that consistently rotten officiating will lead to a major scandal in this league?
I don't know what you mean by scandal, if you're saying that somehow bad officiating is because it's tied to gambling and people are blowing calls. If that's where you're going, I think that that's definitely doable. I think that's something that could be tied together easily, especially when things look so blatant. And again, I don't understand how we're sitting at home watching HD televisions, and there's supposedly this New York officiating room where they're seeing the same thing we're seeing. And somehow still to this day, calls are getting blown. How everything isn't reviewable. How somebody isn't saying upstairs or in New York or in somebody's ear, no, that's the wrong call. Within seconds, I don't understand why that's not happening still. Still we're talking about blown calls. Still guys are getting fined for going after the refs. There has to be a fix at this point simply because of the money. The money you're paying players, the money networks are paying to broadcast, DirecTV charging $500 to have the Sunday ticket package. It's all just about money. And at some point, just get the calls right. That's all anybody's asking, Jay.
Okay, thanks, Chris, which brings us to quickies, which are just that quick. Tiger Woods just had his fifth surgical procedure on his left knee, which became bothersome after he won the Masters. And let's hope and pray he feels no pain and might be able to contend again at Augusta. But I do speak for the masses in saying nobody wants to watch Woods suffer again and miss more cuts, preferring to remember him for one of the greatest comebacks known to sport. He wants to play in the Olympics next summer in Tokyo, but first, he has to play well enough to qualify. And if 2020 turns out to be a dead year for him, well, he already has given us the famous final scene of his movie, April 2019, in the woods of Georgia. At that point, retirement would be the right call for Tiger, really the only call. And shame on the 49ers, who used the occasion of the team's surprising 6-0 start to, yep, raise the average season ticket prices 13% next season. And they tried to soften the blow with this perk, get this, unlimited food and beverages throughout the game experience, excluding booze, of course, all year long. So up there in health-conscious Northern California, a sports team wants to take more of your money and then make you fatter in one swoop. The 49ers think there's only so much food a fan can eat. So as revenge, I suggest that Joey Chestnut and every competitive eater on earth just start showing up at Niners games and devouring all the food possible. Sunday after Sunday after Sunday, keep going, and then see if possibly this backfires on the Niners. I don't think it would. In fact, the far better idea, though, for PR, the Atlanta Falcons got it right. They slashed food and drink prices, and then nearly two dozen pro and college teams followed suit. But the 49ers up there in the most expensive city and region in America, highest cost of living, are gouging their fans when they have sucked for years. And scandal-ridden Michigan State is the overwhelming choice as preseason number one in college basketball, with scandal-ridden Kansas at number three, scandal-ridden Louisville at number five, and scandal-ridden Arizona, scandal-ridden LSU, and scandal-ridden Auburn also ranked.
And now a final Mariotti commentary too hot for ESPN, too smart for the internet, and too chill for political activism. Take it away, Jay.
Given the choice of impeaching President Trump or gutting NFL officiating as we know it, I'm thinking more Americans would purge the zebras. And sick as we are of this topic, we must press on about this never-ending crisis. When Commissioner Roger Goodell says casually that, yeah, sure, the league needs to fix the problem, he doesn't even begin to address the urgency at hand and the potential disaster ahead. Remember, the NFL is held together by the adhesive of gambling, legal, illegal, and fantasy. And as we continue to see officials make horrible calls and the replay system fail miserably, and officiating czar Al Riveron blindly side with his referees almost every time, Goodell is courting a dangerous perception that his league is fixed. Credibility in any sport starts and ends with how the games are officiated, and it speaks volumes about the odor in the house when the NFL's former officiating czars, Mike Pereira and Dean Blandino, fled to television while leaving the mess in the incapable hands of Riveron. After years of condemning gambling as an evil, the NFL now is embracing legalized wagering as it takes form in 17 states and in the District of Columbia. But the more gambling seeps into the NFL culture, it's incumbent upon the league to create a culture of public trust and security. And every time an obvious call is blown, and every time a bettor suffers a bad beat, the NFL risks looking crooked. Coaches, players, on-field officials, replay officials, gamblers, sports betting operators. All it takes is one or two rogues, and the fix is in. That's our show. For our producer and editor, Chris, I am Jay, reminding you to never, ever let anybody mute you in life.